you'd like the fully fleshed out backstory of Wisconsin's legislative redistricting process, I cannot recommend enough the Mapped Out podcast. Take a listen when you get a chance at WPR.org/mappedout. It's the morning show. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Kate Archer-Kent. And the state Supreme Court has ruled that our latest legislative maps for Wisconsin are unconstitutional and must be redrawn. But the timeline is tight here. The Wisconsin Elections Commission says new maps will need to be in place by March 15th if they're to be used in this year's election. So what happens next? And how would you go about building political boundaries in Wisconsin? You can join our conversation at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas at WPR.org. Our guest, John Johnson, he's a Lubar Center research fellow at Marquette University Law School. And John, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with your take on the significance of the state Supreme Court's ruling that our state's legislative maps are unconstitutional. What did you make of it?
Well, I mean, obviously the biggest piece of this is that it is throwing out the maps, as you say. But the most significant part of the ruling beside that is that among the criteria they say they'll consider when choosing a new map is its partisan impact. So, you know, if they're going to explicitly consider how well this map performs for Democrats and Republicans relative to those two parties' share of the statewide vote. And using that as an explicit criteria is a big win for Democrats.
Yeah, but the maps were ruled unconstitutional, right? But not because they were of its partisan impact. Is that correct, John?
That's right. That's right. They did not consider whether partisan gerrymandering violates the state constitution or not in this decision. It was just about what the state constitution means by contiguity.
Contiguous. So if you were to take the majority decision from the state Supreme Court and their discussion about partisan impact and new maps and their insistence that contiguous must is constitutional, how do you see this going forward now? What are the justices looking for in these new maps, do you think?
So they lay out several criteria. Obviously, the first one is equal population. That's the whole point of redistricting. They say they must be contiguous. So, you know, that was at issue in this case. When municipalities are split into little fragments, is it essential that you draw a district where every piece touches, or can you have those municipal islands, as it were, connected to it? So now we have an answer. It's got to be contiguous. And then they say, well, you also need to have general compactness, although they don't define it. And then you need to avoid crossing county lines and municipal lines as much as possible, though you'll certainly need to do that somewhat. So that's sort of a relative thing. How well does one plan do to compared to another? And then, of course, we have this other bit of criteria, which is the partisan impact.
So the state Supreme Court has now, who's going to redraw these maps and what time do they have to get these done?
So the Supreme Court has asked each party to this case, and there are several conservatives and liberal parties, to submit their own preferred maps by January 12th. And then the justices will pick from among those using the criteria they lay out in the decision. Of course, the justices are concurrently giving the state legislature the opportunity to pass another map and get it signed by the governor. And if they were to succeed in doing that, then that would become the state's new map.
We're talking about the state Supreme Court throwing out Wisconsin's legislative maps with John Johnson, Lubar Center research fellow at Marquette University Law School. And if you have a question about the process and how we ended up here, join the conversation, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And the latest seems to be, from what I've seen, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel is reporting that Republicans are likely to appeal this case to the U.S. Supreme Court now. What sort of standing would the U.S. Supreme Court have in weighing in on our state legislative maps?
So it's important to note that the legal issue in this decision was about what the Wisconsin Constitution means by territorial contiguity. And the Wisconsin Supreme Court is the final authority on what the Wisconsin state constitution means. That is not reviewable by the federal Supreme Court. So appealing this case or some aspect of it to the federal Supreme Court would have to be done on other grounds. So I think most likely they're referring to challenging Justice Protasiewicz's non-recusal based on federal due process guarantees or something like that. It's legally quite a stretch. There was one time that I'm aware of that the Supreme Court did weigh in on a state Supreme Court recusal issue, and it was a case in West Virginia that dealt with a pretty clear instance where there was at least the appearance of corruption, where someone who was appearing before the Supreme Court had given millions of dollars to one of the recently elected justices. And even in that case, which dealt with like literal financial bribery, even in that case, many of the conservative justices who are currently on the Supreme Court voted against hearing it because they didn't think that that was the Supreme Court's role. So anyway, it's quite a stretch to try to apply that here, but I think that that's probably what they're going to try to do. And the Supreme Court has done surprising things in the past, so we'll see.
So if the U.S. Supreme Court does not take this up, we also heard rumblings about Assembly Speaker Robin Voss moving forward with potential impeachment proceedings against state Supreme Court Justice Janet Protasiewicz over her comments before her election about redistricting in Wisconsin. Do you still see a possibility of impeachment here?
No.
Okay.
I think it's very difficult to impeach someone after they've made the decision that you don't like. you know, like that. Maybe before, so you can make some sort of more high-minded argument. But if you just wait until the justice rules in a way that you don't like, then it's, you know, that's pretty clearly an outcome-motivated impeachment. But the other reason why I think this is unlikely to happen is this quirk of Wisconsin law that says that you can't have two Supreme Court elections at the same time. So what would end up happening if a seat became vacant is that Governor Evers would get to appoint the replacement on the Supreme Court, and that replacement would serve until the next year when there's not a state Supreme Court election, which happens to be, I think, 2031. So it would be basically giving Governor Evers a freebie to put whoever he wanted on the Supreme Court for the better half of a decade. And I don't see the Republicans in the legislature making that kind of error.
John Johnson, our guest from Marquette University Law School, and we'll go to your questions and comments now and what you see as fair political maps in Wisconsin, constitutional political maps in Wisconsin, 1-800-642-1234. Andrew in Waukesha, good morning.
Hey there.
What do you think?
Hey, I'm just kind of curious. Zip codes are generally drawn with non-political in mind, and they're contiguous. Is there any way that as a basis, zip codes could be used to somehow draw the maps because they're squared off and they're contiguous?
And they're not partisan. It's a great question. John, what do you think?
Hey, that's an interesting idea. You know, part of the issue is that zip codes, in reality, they're not like a geography. They're a mail carrier route, mm-hmm. Is how they're defined. And so then the Census Bureau goes in and kind of tries to draw a shape around where the mail carrier is going, and they call that a zip code tabulation area. But in principle, I don't see why you couldn't use those ZCTAs, as they're abbreviated, to as a basis for political districts. I think there are not enough of them. So the real challenge is that you need a building block small enough that you can get to that really accurate, you know, for an assembly seat, it's like 59,300 or something is the population target. So you would still end up having to split them a lot. And then that kind of gets you back to where you started with making decisions. What seem like real small decisions over where this neighborhood goes and this district versus this district, but that can end up being really politically consequential if that's what you're trying to do.
John Johnson, Lubar Center Research Fellow at Marquette University Law School. So is our guest, and the liberal majority on the state Supreme Court's ordered the Republican-controlled state legislature to redraw Wisconsin's legislative districts. And the other parties are adding their maps to the mix. And perhaps the Supreme Court has their own maps that are forthcoming in the days and weeks to come. What would you like to see from Wisconsin's next political boundaries? 1-800-642-1234. I'm Lee Rayburn. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Lee Rayburn, and we're talking about the state Supreme Court's order for the state legislature to go back to the drawing board and come up with new maps for Wisconsin state legislative districts, not because they're unfair, but because they're unconstitutional, according to the court. Our guest, John Johnson, Lubar Center Research Fellow at Marquette University Law School, and you can join us with your questions or how you see our political maps in Wisconsin from where you're voting this morning. 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. And John, you published some research earlier this year that found Democrats would have gained an additional 4 assembly seats had the state used Governor Evers' least change map when redistricting. Those additional seats would still be short of any sort of Democratic majority. So what do you see as some of the challenges for Democrats gaining assembly seats regardless of these maps?
Yeah, the Republican advantage exists even if you draw maps in a neutral way, because there's a lot of Democrats packed into the large cities in the state, and there aren't similarly highly populated, heavily Republican parts of Wisconsin. So if you draw districts that are compact, and especially if you're trying to respect municipal boundaries, as most people think you should, you're going to end up drawing some really heavily blue districts that don't have similarly heavily red districts, which does give Republicans this advantage. But a fair map would have more competitive seats. So under the Evers least change proposal, which is the one he put forward 2 years ago after the Supreme Court said that they would only consider maps that deviated as minimally as possible from the existing map. So, you know, the existing map was a strong Republican gerrymander, and they were saying that they would only choose maps that deviated slightly from that. I estimate that actual Democratic candidates last year would have gotten 39 of those seats compared to the 35 that they actually won. But Tony Evers himself won a majority in 47 of them. If we had been using those maps and had Democrats been as popular as Tony Evers was, then you know, you would have seen a much tighter election. I think a reasonable analog to the criteria that the state Supreme Court put forward is actually the map, the People's Map Commission that Tony Evers also started, put forward. That map didn't try to do any kind of least change approach. It drew a wholesale new map, which is what the Supreme Court has called for in this decision. And it also paid some attention to trying to it paid some attention to partisan impact in a similar way to what the majority called for in their recent decision. And under that map, I estimate that Democrats would have won 43 seats, again, up from the 35 they actually won last November, but that Tony Evers himself actually carried a majority of the vote in 53 of those hypothetical People's Map Commission seats. So that gives you a sense of how many competitive seats there would be. Tony Evers, of course, had about a 3-point margin of victory, as I recall, across the state.
John Johnson, our guest, and your opportunity to ask our expert your questions about Wisconsin's redistricting process, the state Supreme Court's decision, and what's next for us voters in Wisconsin at 800-642-1234. Dwayne in Westfield, good morning.
Morning. How you doing? Longtime listener. I've been a Republican for a long period of time, but after I've seen what's going on with these last elections about the gerrymandering and everything else, I got fed up with it. And I don't understand why it's like if you did everything for over decades that, I mean, it's been working for us. We've had no major problems. And then within the last 2 decades, that's all they've been talking about. They just want to get it so they get everything into their favor. Why do the Republicans always want to do something like this right when they don't? I mean, it doesn't go in their favor.
Dwayne, thank you for the call. And I'd say we've seen gerrymandering from Democrats in other states. Is this an issue of power? Is there a way to prevent this, John?
There are ways to prevent it. I'll say two things related to that that make gerrymandering more of an issue now than ever before. And one is the technology that we have that allows us to do this. We can use computer modeling to be more sophisticated in maximizing partisan advantage when we're drawing maps. And then the other thing that might be even more important in enabling gerrymanders is that voters behave in a more predictable way. So if you go back to like the 2000 election, the correlation between how people voted for a Democrat or a Republican in the state assembly race versus the presidential race, that was not so strongly correlated. People would split their ticket a lot in a way that was difficult to predict, whereas now most people vote a straight ticket, and they vote the same straight ticket year after year. And so you end up having an electorate that's easier to predict and then having more sophisticated tools in order to take advantage of that behavior, which I think is why we hear about it more. There are states where Democrats do this, Illinois in particular, you know, with as much gusto as we see here. But there are a lot of states that have figured out how to take this gamesmanship out of their map drawing process. In Missouri, they require bipartisan maps. They put together commissions to draw the maps for the state legislature that are equally comprised of Democrats and Republicans, and they require 70% of them to agree on a map. And if they fail to do that by a certain deadline, then the court automatically steps in a clearly defined way to solve that problem. They have a different process in Michigan that's a little convoluted, so I won't try to describe it now, but it basically uses citizens to draw it who aren't members or aren't party officers. And it also has a detailed series of steps that happens if that group fails to reach a decision. So in Wisconsin, we don't have a nonpartisan process, and also we don't have a clearly spelled out series of steps in our Constitution or in another law that explains what happened when the political branches deadlock, as happened in the most recent cycle when Governor Evers vetoed what the legislature put forward and there was no effort to come up with a compromise from the legislature. So, yeah, there are a lot of states that have solved this, but we are not one of them. And that's why we have this kind of ad hoc court-driven process that we're in right now.
John Johnson, Lou Barr Center Research Fellow at Marquette University Law School, our guest. Rich and Rhinelander, you're next. Good morning.
Good morning. It's broadly agreed that Wisconsin is one of the most segregated states in the nation. And I'm wondering if the professor thinks that minorities are underrepresented in the assembly and or the Senate, and if redistricting, if there is underrepresentation, if drawing new maps in any way could alleviate the problem of underrepresentation.
Thank you, Rich. John?
The way that segregation interacts with redistricting is sort of strange and maybe counterintuitive. So the applicable bit of federal law here is the Voting Rights Act and the attendant case law, which says that in places where it's possible, you need to draw some districts where racial minority groups are a majority or a controlling proportion of the electorate. And this actually kind of coincides with Republican map making goals, because when they seek to pack Democratic voters, the voting rights law actually sort of mandates that. So this comes into play in Wisconsin only in Milwaukee, where they draw majority or plurality black districts on the north side of the city, and then two plurality Latino districts on the south side. And so the goal of Republican map drawers to pack Democrats into some really heavily blue districts kind of works in tandem with this federal civil rights law requirement to draw districts that will have lots of black and Latino voters in them. So it's I think new districts would potentially increase the number of majority black districts by one or none, and probably wouldn't change the number for Latino districts at all. So perhaps surprisingly, I don't think we would see huge change there from new maps.
Great. I really appreciate that perspective. And Rich, thank you for the call. And John, we are just out of time this morning, but I thank you for yours very much.
Thank you.
John Johnson is a Lubar Center Research Fellow at Marquette University Law School. And we want to hear your ideas for our programs. We want to get your reaction. And you can always contact us, ideas@WPR.org, with your email. You can also go to WPR.org/mornings to leave suggestions via web form there. Just happy to have you along for the ride and part of the show. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.